Hi, I'm Thomas Cook. Welcome to Making It and what that means to me.
Welcome to another episode of Making It with Thomas Cook. We are now in, literally, in the Big Apple. We're in it right now. We're actually looking at the East River. Literally looking at the East River right now. Or is that the Hudson? Might be the Hudson. Anyway, Thomas, take us through your arrival to the Big Apple.
Thank you, Brian, for that really long introduction. I really appreciate it. Basically, for me, when I left Palm Beach, the last thing I remember doing was singing for Prince Charles at the Piaget Cup. Met a young lady there who was a horseback rider. She did side saddle. Do you know what side saddle is? Where you sit side on a horse with a cucumber sandwich, a flask, you wear a top hat, your black clothes, and she basically bumps up and down as she goes on the horse. And so any of you out there that know side saddle, you understand. Met this young lady. She was really awesome. We kept in touch. And then she said, you should come to New York. You do great here. You should pursue fundraising and singing and do your dream. And I thought, wow, New York City. That's a really big city. A boy from Cape Cod, from Massachusetts, going to New York City. Oh, wow. I guess if I wasn't excited for her to invite me, I guess I probably would have never gone at that age because I was in my early 20s. That song had just come out, Frank Sinatra. If I could make it here, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York, New York, da da da. Okay, so I moved to New York, ended up moving in with this amazing young lady, kind of experienced life. Never knew that kind of life in New York. Was very involved in the horse scene, went to horse shows. Same time I was trying to figure out what I was gonna do. Her dad was one of the most generous philanthropic folks here in New York City. So we went to all these amazing black tie events, and I'd been to events, but not like New York black tie. There was a club called Regines, and it used to be this really exotic, amazing private club that the rich and famous would go to, you know, like Andy Warhol and all these people. Her dad was a sponsor at these tables. So I'm sitting at a table one day, and in front of me, I said, hey, what's your name? And he says, Stephen. I said, Stephen, I'm Thomas Cook. I said, nice to meet you. What's your last name? He said, Rockefeller. And I'm like, oh, cool. And then the girl beside me, she was very sweet. So we started chatting, and I asked her, and her name was Patty. And then I said, oh, Patty, nice to meet you as well. I said, I'm Thomas Cook. I'm here with Lisa. And I said, what's your last name? She said, Hearst. I said, Patty Hearst? She goes, uh-huh. I said, oh, you poor thing. And Patty, if you're listening, I was so overwhelmed and excited that you were just honest. You were real. You were sweet as could be. And I just felt so bad that you had gone through so much stuff in your life. And for those of you that don't know who Patty Hearst is, as in Hearst Publications, she was kidnapped. And that was before ISIS and terrorism and all that kind of stuff. Do you remember that story, yeah. Brian? She was just as sweet as could be. She was one of the nicest people. And I thought, you can meet really nice people in New York that aren't affected and they don't act that way. And she was just really nice. Years later, I find out that she married her bodyguard. And I thought, what a great story. She actually married somebody that protected her. And what's really weird is literally 20 years later, I'm at Women's Entertainment Network with AMC Theater, and my pseudo-stepsister, Ellen, hi Ellen, love ya, was interviewing this young lady for an internship, and she was blonde, she was beautiful. My stepsister said she was the daughter to Patty Hearst. And I'm like, get out of here. You can't make this stuff up. And she was such a sweet girl. And again, she was like her mom. Wanted an internship, didn't play the role, just sweet as could be. And I just thought, I love how the universe keeps on going around in circles and circles and circles. that was part of the story with New York, and it was fun, and did the horse shows, did all that stuff, and we kind of didn't work out. We went our separate ways. I had no clue where I was going to live, and it was kind of a quick exit, and that's a whole nother chapter. If any of you have ever experienced living in New York or haven't, let me tell you, it's a nightmare. To try to find an apartment, to try to find a place to live, to try to be able to survive in New York, wow, back in the 80s, 90s, this was not easy. It was really tough. You paid a lot of money. Back then, a lot of money was like half of what we have now. But, you know, $600 back then is like $2,000 now. So I didn't want to call my parents. I didn't want to tell them that I was no longer living with this young lady. I went back to that song in my head. If I can make it here, I'll make it anywhere. And I said, I am not leaving New York till I make it. And so you asked me, how did I come up with the name of the book? And isn't that funny? Until I make it. What is making it? We will go back to that over and over again in this podcast, because it's been this amazing story that every journey is still making it. And I love it. So I left and I had to find a place. At back in those days, I think I don't know if it was Craigslist. Maybe it was. I don't remember what that platform was called. But I ended up finding this crazy artist man who had put an ad in the paper that he was renting he called it a small intimate space within his one bedroom. All right, guys. The small intimate space was me sleeping in his closet, no pun intended, under his clothes. So I actually was in a sleeping bag under his clothes, and he rented that to me for like $300 a month. And it was a railroad apartment, and that's where you have to walk through everything to get to the back door. So I'd be like, hey, on my way to the bathroom. It didn't matter. I mean, of course I had my Gucci shoes and my blue blazer, and I had the best clothes ever, and I was sleeping on the floor. And I thought, wow, if my parents or anybody knew of this, they'd be appalled. But it didn't matter. I did not want to leave New York. It was scary. I wouldn't tell anybody that I was that scared, because I really wanted to get through this. And then my mom, who's a huge devoted Catholic, love you, Mom. And my dad, who was Protestant, love you, Dad, he's in heaven. And then everybody thought I was Jewish. That's a whole nother story I'll get to later. I thought, where can I go get a job? And I figured it out. I will go to the Catholic Church. They own more properties than anybody else in New York. They're the largest real estate holder. I will call up the Archdiocese and say that I want to work in development, because they do all the parties, special events, they do all this stuff. So I called and spoke to this woman named Margaret, and she was the head of Father Robert Robbins. If you're listening, I love you, Father. She was Robert's assistant, and I had called and said, I called to find out what his name was. Then I went there in person, and I said I was there for the appointment. And Margaret, I think, was from Jersey or Brooklyn or Brookline, one of those places. Loved her. I said, here, I'm here for the appointment. She looks at me, she goes, you're lying. You don't have an appointment. You're going to go to hell. I was like, oh, my God, welcome to New York. She was calling me on my bluff. And I said, no, really, really, ma'am, I have an appointment. She goes, you're lying again. She goes, you don't have an appointment. I'm the only one that makes his appointments. Tell me the truth. So I said, okay, I need a job. I swear to God, I need a job. I've done a lot of fundraising, development. I've done great stuff. Can I just get a chance, please? She picked up the phone and goes, Father, got a young man here. First of all, he lied when he started, said he had an appointment. He doesn't. But he's a good kid. I think you should take 2 minutes. Margaret's in heaven. So, Margaret, I know you're listening with the angels. Thank you. Thank you for letting me get in that front door. So I walk into Father Robin's office in my blue blazer, my Gucci's and my khakis and my blue button-down shirt. I said, Father, I'm Thomas Cook. It's nice to meet you. God bless him. I walk in with a portfolio that has all my pictures of me being famous, with Prince Charles and race cars, and it shows all this stuff I've done for charity work. And God, I was in my 20s. I thought that book was incredible. And you look back now in my 50s and I think, I was so wet behind the ears. But the greatest thing was, I did it. I was so confident. I was proud of everything I've tried to do. And, you know, I look back at it now and thanks, Father Robert Robbins, because you were inspired that I was really proud and needed a break. And I say this to every young kid now, if you're listening, when you go to somebody and they're older, and you go and you're honest and you're humble and you really ask for help, we'll do it. All we want to hear from young people is, I need a chance. Can you help me with a break? I'll work hard. I'm not asking you to give me anything, but give me a chance. That was my voice to Father Robert Robbins. He heard me. He was so kind. He picked up the phone and he called a friend of his. I'm not sure who it was, but I think it was somebody with the unions. Back then, unions were, and they still are now, but back then the unions were very powerful in the liquor and the restaurant and hospitality. A lot of Italians, I think, because they had a lot of Italian restaurants back then. And he got me my first job. And my first job that he got me was at Tavern on the Green. I didn't know what Tavern on the Green was. So Tom Minetti was the head of Tavern on the Green. And for any of you that know New York all these years, you all know back in the old days when Warner LeRoy, who also owned The Wizard of Oz, the movie, owned Tavern on the Green. And that was my first job. And it was this incredible place with millions of lights and the crystal room and chandeliers everywhere. It was like incredible. I wore a tuxedo every day and greeted people and ended up singing. Every time somebody's birthday was there, I'd sing happy birthday. I became the happy birthday man. So Brian, you always ask, you always sing happy birthday, why? And it happened at Tavern on the Green. So I would take them into the crystal room, and back then the crystal room was the room with all the chandeliers. And there was tons of chandeliers. And we'd make up this story. Oh, that chandelier belonged to the prince of so-and-so. That one was the king of so-and-so. This one was the king of Saudi Arabia. So we'd do all of these chandeliers and we'd make up stories of the chandeliers. And we'd make up a different story for every person. So, but it didn't matter. People just wanted to hear, where's that chandelier from? So it was hysterical. And I met so many fun people. I mean, let's be honest, back then, Woody Allen, everybody would come through. Donald Trump, that guy, also used to come through with his kids when they're little, and they were always so well-behaved. I thought, oh my God, those kids are amazing. They're like, they were never loud, they were always polite, they folded their hands. So no matter what, he was an amazing dad with his first wife. What was her name? Ivana? Yeah, Ivana. Amazing. So all these kids would come in, and that's also where, and I'll get back to this in another story way down the line, but you'll remember Tavern on the Green. That's where I first met a guy named Steve Hoffman, who is the physicist now, who invented the first drug ever that's able to reverse pancreatic, prostate, and breast cancer with no chemo, no radiation, and he's doing it with proton therapy free radicals. That story is so amazing, but you're going to have to wait for it because that's way down the line. But that's where I first met him. So remember Tavern on the Green. Also at Tavern on the Green, I was asked one time if I would be the escort for this woman. And I had to call my mother. I said, listen, they have asked me to spend the evening as an escort, bringing this woman, not that kind of escort, people. Listen to me. Back then, that meant to be in charge of a celebrity, to be with them, make sure you're from beginning to the end of the event, take care of them. So I was asked to do this for a woman by the name of Betty Davis. And I said, I called my mother. I said, Ma! Ma! Yeah, I'm from Boston, people, if you're wondering. I said, Ma, who's Betty Davis? And she said, Thomas, remember all the black and white movies we used to watch? And she reminded me, and I went, oh, that's so cool. So I met Betty Davis, met her at the Lincoln Center, went to the event. Then we came to Tavern on the Green. Then I hosted in Tavern on the Green on the red carpet. I'll never forget, there were rules. Nobody could touch her car. Touch the car. She has her arm on my arm. We're walking the red carpet. They stop her and they say, Miss Davis, what do you think of your daughter that wrote the book and la, la, la? And she puts her hand up, puts it right in front of the camera, and she says, you're much too close. She pushes the camera away. I am crying because I'm laughing so hard. That was the greatest line ever for a T-shirt. Think about it. For anywhere you go, a hand in your face, you're much too close with Betty Davis eyes and her lips. And how wonderful. What a great way to say back off. And I love that as my first T-shirt design. Never happened, but it was a cute idea. That was one of the many moments. And we're sitting at the table and the waiter, oh, great story, Brian, you love this. The waiter comes up and keeps on replacing her water glass. I'm like, why after every time she takes a sip of water, do they take her glass? So eventually I thought it was kind of weird. So I got up and followed the waiter. And I followed him all the way to the kitchen. He was taking the glass with her lipstick on the glass and selling it to people outside the back kitchen of, oh, I already told you the place, I can't tell you again. So that, people, just so you know, I am gonna give an idea away for free. That's when I came up with the idea that one day I wanna own an entire glassware of all these movie stars that will do this for me, and all the proceeds will go to a charity. And it's called lip service. So I wanted to have champagne glasses with every celebrity's lips on them. And I love the name lip service. I think that's so cool. So I never did it. And if anyone's listening and you do it, I have proof that this was my idea legally. So don't steal it, because I still want to do it one day and give money back to children or cancer or some amazing cause. Because, you know, the one thing we do learn in our life as young people is, boy, let me tell you, there's a lot of people out there that give lip service. They just talk, and they never deliver. Ever deliver. So I thought that was funny back then. And that's how I got to meet Betty Davis. That's where Jimmy Stewart came in. During that time, let's go back to Father Robbins. People always ask me, what was one of your biggest breaks in life? You know, what was that one moment you remember? And I'll never forget Father Robert Robbins. I know you're listening. I love you, Father. He called me. He said, Thomas, he says, I know you're not from New York, but we have a thing here called the Al Smith Dinner. It's at the Waldorf. And the Al Smith Dinner is every incoming president of the United States attends with the cardinal, the bishop, people from the Vatican. And Al Smith was, I think, the first mayor in New York. And mayor, and I don't want to get that wrong, but I will tell you that the Al Smith Dinner is the most powerful folks in the city. It goes to Catholic charities. It's an amazing dinner, and it's truly, you'll all remember, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton spoke at the Al Smith Dinner, and it was live on TV. That's the Al Smith Dinner. So I was asked to sing the Star Spangled Banner and America the Beautiful a cappella. Yeah. And it was so sweet of him to allow me that, because that was my first break to sing for the Cardinal, some of the Vatican folks, at that time President Bush Sr., and meet Al Smith back then and the family. And it was awesome. It was one of those moments where I thought I had gone to heaven and this was it. That was my moment, folks, that when you say, did you make it? That was my first time I ever said, wow, I think I made it. I think this is it. This is my break that's going to open every door, every path. I got to sing for the President of the United States, some of the most powerful people in New York. And I did it. Sorry, I just had some coffee. And I did it in such a way that I was welcomed into the into the most incredible city in the world, New York, with the most important socialites. So it was incredible. Up to this day, I think about, I was 20-something, and that was my first break. And I'd never seen the presidential suite of the Waldorf. And I got invited up to that, where they had butlers, and the president was there. Every window is bulletproof. And I thought, every president of the United States has used this room. And that's the only hotel presidents would go to, because they have underground tunnels. Since then, the Waldorf has been sold to another country, which I won't mention. And the president of the United States, whoever that's going to be from now on, will never go there. So I was a part of history. I was a part of an amazing, incredible journey. And remember, it's a Hilton hotel. It was a Hilton hotel. And I won't forget, because I've got more chapters ahead, but Kathy and Rick Hilton, the mother and father of Paris and Nikki Hilton, became my friends 10 years later. And let me tell you something. They went and they lived at the Waldorf, at the suites of Mr. and Mrs. Hilton. So it ended up bringing me back to that. Everything, folks, goes around a full circle. But that's in some other chapters. I'll talk about my L.A. life after New York, with Kathy and Rick, who are wonderful and sweet, and that first time I ever met Paris Hilton and her sister, Nikki, who was too young to talk. But great story. So New York for me was these amazing opportunities. It was really hard finding work. And one of my greatest advices I can give to young people is, it doesn't matter. You know, I told you the story of getting my first job with Father Robbins and going to the, you know, Archdiocese. But what I didn't tell you is, before that, my first job was, it was an ad in the paper, and it was the New York Law Journal. And the New York Law Journal had a, and I was desperate. I needed money bad. And the New York Law Journal said, looking for sales reps, but only with a British accent. And I'm like, I'm so excited.
British accent round two.
I'm like, my Indiana days paid off. So I actually, oh God, folks, please just know, you do whatever it takes. You do whatever it takes, and in such a way that you don't give your soul up and you don't sell yourself. But I absolutely went in, and there was this woman that had more hairspray of a beehive hairdo that went up really high. She had these little glasses, and she always wore a pearl necklace, and she was British. And she was very, very classy, but extremely old school. You know, like one of those women that you see in the movies that you're sitting at a typewriter and you must sit up straight. She had said, we're only hiring people with British accents because the New York Law Journal is the oldest law journal in America, and people listen to British accents. And I said, oh, that's lovely. Here we go, Indiana. I said, oh, I love that so much. I love the New York Law Journal. The New York Law Journal is such a wonderful organization that allows people to truly know what the law in America, and you archive everything. It's so lovely. Okay, folks, I got the job. The funny thing, and the worst thing, is I actually had to go to work every day and fake an English accent. Oh, my God, it was so funny. And I hated myself. It was horrible. It was horrible that I was doing that. I wonder, she probably knew I really wasn't, but she gave me my job. So that was actually my first job before I figured out how to get to the Archdiocese and the Catholic Church. So after all that kind of stuff, My journey then, after singing at the Elsmith Dinner, was, how do I become a singer in New York? How do I do Broadway? How do I audition for shows? What do I do next? You know what? I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be right back, because I have to filter what I'm about to say next.
Love and caring, take.
you enjoyed that song and would like to support Thomas Cook's music and ongoing podcast, please visit iTunes, where you can purchase Thomas's album, The Gift of Words and Music. For more information and to book Thomas as a speaker at your next event, please visit thomascookdc.com.